You're tuned to Perspectives, the weekly public affairs show, which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. And joining me now is Barbara Jikowski, and she is the author of a recent book called Searching for Lincoln's Ghost. Actually, this is Barbara's first book. Barbara, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Well, thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Tell us a little bit about this novel that you came up with, because as I mentioned, this is your first novel. Right. Why did you pick this topic, this genre?
Okay. Well, you know, I'm kind of puzzled almost what kind of genre it is. It's really a young adult fiction, historical fiction. But most of my readers so far have been adults.
Yes.
So it's a coming-of-age book, basically, and particularly for readers who grew up in the 1960s, I think it'll be a very evocative type of book. It's historical fiction as well. I chose that genre because I really think that the ages of 11 to 14 are probably the most pivotal years in our development. Usually the things that move us then are very pivotal to the kind of adults that we become and the experiences that we have during those years. So I wanted to tackle some very serious social issues looking through the lens of that time frame in life. And I really wanted to capture the essence of what it was like to grow up in the 1960s. Many of the people who have read it said it really takes people right back to that time.
And it's interesting that you chose the 60s because in the 1860s, of course, when President Lincoln was in office and during the Civil War, the whole war was about civil rights and slavery. And in the 1960s, the civil rights was a big issue as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's kind of astounding. 100 years is really a blip in time. And, you know, looking back at it, that time frame that you said, 1966, 18, just mere 100 years before, we were just ending this Civil War. So, and, you know, for anybody who's grown up during that time, the book really takes place in 1966, and society was very much segregated still at that period of life. And this is kind of what the story is about, is a elementary school during this phase of life that was really feeling the growing pangs of the whole nation as far as the changes that were happening in race relations.
Do you think this is partially autobiographical?
Well, you know, I think that everybody has writes from something autobiographical somewhere in their mind. But I think what happens when you write, when you do fiction writing, those very real pieces get all mixed up in the cauldron of imagination, so that what comes out is really, you know, not exactly reality, but still has very definite parts of the writer in it. Just like, you know, the book, the major influence for me for this book was Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird, which, of course, is a big classic. I just wanted to write a book that was similar in tone and style, that was looking at a different era in our history. But basically, it's similar in the way that it starts as a look back from an adult going back to childhood. And so most of the book is through the lens of an 11-year-old, although it does start with the look back. And I think, you know, Harper Lee has talked about how much of that book was mirroring her life story.
It is a book for everyone, I would say. I'm a big fan of President Lincoln, and a lot of the young people, if you ask them about presidents, they know President Washington and President Lincoln. And so is there a reason in particular that you selected President Lincoln?
Well, yeah, there is. I mean, in this book, in Searching for Lincoln's Ghost, his role is largely symbolic.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that studying, just as you said, studying the life of Lincoln is a part of every American's childhood. I know I started studying Lincoln at the age of 11, and that's the age of the person and the protagonist in the book. And I was really enchanted by the life of Lincoln. I happened to live near enough where I could go to Springfield and really got into Lincoln culture. I selected Lincoln because he's an iconic hero that everyone can relate to. The one thing that we all have in common is that we were all children once. And, when Lincoln is kind of that that hook that can take us all back to our childhood. Everyone loves Lincoln, whether you're Democrat or Republican or whatever. He's like our collective moral compass. And that's what this book is talking about. Searching for Lincoln's Ghost is talking about resetting our moral compass. So he was an excellent figure to use. The other thing about it was I just happened to stumble across some of the very fascinating and wonderful Lincoln factoids and folklore that is out there, and it really captivated me. Some of the stories that are still going around as far as Lincoln's ghost, and that he's still haunting the White. Even the White House website has a thing about Lincoln's ghost.
Right.
Because great people in history, Winston Churchill included, claimed to have encountered Lincoln's ghost during White House stays. Some of those are humorous. In fact, that incident is humorous. Winston Churchill claims he was getting out of the bathtub stark naked when he saw Lincoln's ghost. They're funny and they're humorous and they're just endearing. And, there's also legends about Lincoln's ghost train when his body was being transported back to Springfield from Washington. That was quite a long trip back, in the 1860s. And there are people who say that ghost train still haunts the tracks, especially around Urbana, Illinois, that people have claimed to see the phantom train and seen the coffin inside. And clocks stop and are 20 minutes late. And this is just kind of intriguing stuff. Ghost stories are a part of childhood as well. So I thought, well, what a great hook to take some of these really intriguing folklore and tie it into a tale about coming of age.
Interesting as well is the fact that because you're dealing with 1860s and the 1960s, President Kennedy, who was also civil rights activist, was assassinated, as was President Lincoln. And Jackie Kennedy, the First Lady, had specifically requested that she wanted President Kennedy's funeral to be exactly as President Lincoln's was.
Yep, you're exactly right. Yeah, you're exactly right. So anybody who was of age of that time really saw it recreated.
Now, as far as teaching, we hear about Honest Abe, and the fact that he was such an honest man and a kind man. And we try and teach our children about stuff like this through history, through stories. One of the things that you deal with in this book, in addition to the issue of civil rights and racism, et cetera, is the disturbing fact about abuse in the Catholic Church.
Yes, yeah. Well, that was kind of the kingpin issue that made me want to write this book. We have so many hate crimes going on, and I consider, out of bullying and prejudice, gay bashing, all these kind of things that are our current social crusades. But out of all of those, I think that child sex abuse, particularly by clergy, is really the most horrific crime of all. And I wanted to write a story around that and how it does affect children, because so many of the arguments have been, oh, it's a rite of passage and it really doesn't affect. And I think we've seen that that's not true. But I wanted to profile a specific child in this book. It still appalls me that the outcry and the retribution hasn't been greater. And it's not just the Catholic Church. It's a lot of churches that have gone through this, the clergy of abuse, and many people don't want to hear about it. They want to kind of keep it in the darkness, just kind of like the old days of segregation. And so, to me, it kind of had a link right there that, these are the new issues. Hatred or crimes or, hate crimes, any form of abuse, they're all related. It doesn't matter the object and it doesn't matter the era. And, in the 60s are when many of these crimes were perpetrated, and it was decades before it would come to light. So when you take that period of history, when we are dealing with segregation out in the open, I wanted to write about some of the things coming down the pike so that people could relate those issues.
What about response from the church or the clergy? Have you heard anything about that?
Not Not so much, no. You know, there's a wonderful HBO special that's going, it's airing right now. In fact, it aired this month, called Mea Maxima Culpa, Silence in the House of God. It's a HBO documentary by Alex Gibney. And, you know, it's really addressing the systematic conspiracy to silence victims of sexual abuse all the way to the highest office of the Vatican. So it's really, it's, you know, we've heard stories about it, but then they go away. And I don't know that anybody's really happy with the way, you know, it's been addressed, that victims have been compensated for the devastation to their lives.
This is the year of Lincoln, I guess you could say, because of the movie Lincoln. And then there have been a lot of specials on Lincoln. The Civil War's 150th anniversary was not too long ago celebrated. And then the Pope talking about stepping down.
Yeah.
It seems like your book is very topical.
Well, you know, that's the thing. We've got to learn from history. And, you know, some folks have said, boy, you took on a lot of issues. It's a short book. It's a fast read, and it
yes.
takes on a lot of issues. But I think, you know, one of the objectives that I wanted Searching for Lincoln's Ghost to say is that we've got to learn from history. We've got to look at, you know, how we dealt with things. And but, you know, more than a societal change, I think the message that this book is the personal responsibility that each of us has to conquer or look at the things we fear, the people we fear, and make a decision. Are we going to handle that with hatred, or are we going to handle it with empathy or tolerance? And these are individual choices that we encounter people one by one. It's our individual. So it's the power of the individual that I think I wanted to address in this book.
You mentioned empathy. Sometimes people, I guess, confuse that with compassion, or that they know how that person feels, or unless they've been in those shoes.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So in this book, there's a character by the name of Ezra, and he's kind of the parental figure in the character's life. Andy is doesn't have parents. He's being raised by a grandmother, and she's kind of a lonely kid. And I think, you know, that's another type of issue that it gets in. It originally begins with her search to find out, is there life after death? Because her parents are gone, and she's lonely, and she wants to know that. And I think that's true of all children who lose parents at a young age. They have a particular interest in death and what happens to us after we die. And I think we all have that interest at some point in life, because how we answer that question really directly affects the meaning we attach to this life. And so that becomes what her search starts to be about.
Well, you read my mind, I guess, because I was going to bring up Ezra next, and the fact that you named the character Ezra. Was there a specific reason for using, I guess, a biblical name or Jewish name?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm a very spiritual person, number one, and I certainly, if you're taking on a big topic like clergy sex abuse, I didn't want that to be misconstrued in any way, that this is an anti-spiritual book or a book that doesn't, I'm not being anti-religion in the book. So that was really important to me. And Ezra, to me, was kind of a, I guess, if, you know, I would be, especially particularly a child, anybody's child, their vision of what would a godly man be like. He kind of assumed that role. Sometimes we find God in places we don't expect, and we don't find him in places we do. And so I wanted Ezra to be kind of the quintessential spiritual man, that, you know, non-judgmental, the loving figure that helps her through some very serious problems and very serious issues.
I understand you're already working on another book, and it also takes place in the 60s, decade of the 60s, I understand?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of obsessed with the 60s, I guess.
Nothing wrong with that.
Well, one of the reasons the next work that I'm doing really centers, this one is not a young adult. It's called Losing Is Still Ours, and I hope to have it out this year. But this one's You know, the 60s were a time where we put everything out in the open. We kind of laid it on the line in the 60s, said, okay, what are our choices going to be? Are we going to choose love or are we going to choose hate? Are we going to choose peace over war? It was when the dreams of all the young people were being birthed into a kind of a changing reality that really upset the status quo in so many ways. And in a way, it was an examination of love. I mean, you can look at it the very superficial way. It was the sexual revolution. We hear about the summer of love. The Beatles were singing All You Need Is Love. There was that level. But there was also that deeper level of love and understanding that was being touted by great leaders like Martin Luther King Jr. and Robert Kennedy. So this book is, it's a love story taking place in the 60s, particularly 68, and how the changes in the country had really permeated into the average American lives of two families. The idea that loss has meaning too. We lost a lot of great leaders that year. We lost a lot of great dreams that year. But maybe we find the greatest meaning even in the things that we lose.
That's a great point. And your bio states that you have a counseling degree.
Yes.
You have a degree in philosophy,
yes.
Both from Indiana University. So as a philosopher and a counselor, is that when you kind of started thinking up about the fact that perhaps you wanted to write this book? Because of what you heard from other people and what they were struggling with? Because sometimes, as you mentioned, there are children who have been hurt, and it's not till years later that they come out and say, or some of them don't ever say anything.
Right.
And
right.
So they carry that hurt forever.
Well, yeah, I think definitely the experience of counseling and hearing people at their most authentic and hearing their stories and processing their loss, that's actually a really good point, because I started really my writing life seriously when I started counseling. So I guess I've never made that link until you said that right now. Very definitely. When I majored in philosophy, I was a big Kierkegaard person. So I think, and I had some losses early in my life, lost. Not parents, but close relatives. So at a young age, I think I started thinking a lot about death and loss and probably all of that together kind of. You know, I've always been a writer, but not really seriously until I got my counseling degree.
And, of course, in the late 60s and early 70s, we started also finding out that a lot of the rock and roll songs, which people, you know, called banging and screaming, but then we call the Renaissance period, the rock and roll started coming of age. People started listening to the lyrics more, and a lot of those lyrics were what you were talking about. All you need is love. You know, if you're going to San Francisco, wear your flowers in your hair.
Exactly.
And a lot of those opened up the eyes of the young people also, because they finally found out, you know what, this is not just music to dance to, but there's a meaning here. And just the same as you have done with this book, this is not just a book for children or a book that talks about Lincoln, but there are some issues here that we have to deal with.
Well, you know, and ideally, writing it for a kind of young adult, and I think, you know, could be as young as middle age, it's a great book to read with parents or even grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'd be the grandparents who are in the 60s, you know, that have gone through the 60s generation. And it'd be a great book as a discussion tool to talk with your children or, you know, to ask them about these type of issues and to generate very meaningful conversations on a variety of topics. You know, another big topic in this book is fear and depression.
Yes.
Abraham Lincoln suffered from depression. Joshua Shank wrote a wonderful book called Lincoln's Melancholy.
It's a great book.
Yeah, and, you know, and there was his whole argument, one of them was that, you know, had Lincoln not been depressed, he might not have been the great man that he became, that had such an influence on what he ended up doing ultimately. And so that's addressed in the book. And fear, I think fear is the basic thing. There's a lot of things that, you know, all hate springs from fear. It's when we fear something, we don't understand something, that we objectify it and allows us to hate. So getting at the root of our fears, doing the things that we fear the most.
And when it's an adult teaching you about that fear, that child grows up thinking that perhaps this group of people I have to stay away from, or I have to stay away from this neighborhood, or I have to stay away from this because that's bad for you. And they put that in your mind.
Yes.
And you grow up thinking that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, in the lens of childhood, when you're experiencing these things for the first time, you kind of see how prejudices are born. Even in the book, the bully in the book, so to speak, find out, well, there's if you look at even stepping in a bully's shoes, why are they bullying? What type of loss have they suffered to make them react in such a way?
It seems that these tough issues, like sexual abuse and stuff that people don't talk about, like depression and, of course, melancholy is a better word than depression. And so they think about stuff like that, but when they read it in a book, they seem to accept it a little bit more. And I'm thinking of one of my favorite authors as well, Jodi Picoult. And she does that as well, where she throws in these issues about autistic children or about bullies and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, people go, wow, you know, that I have to take a closer look at myself. Am I that way, et cetera?
Yes, exactly. I think, you know, those are the books we end up loving the most, the ones that change us or really change our worldview, even if it doesn't change us and we start to justify why we feel the way we do, or at least examine our feelings or our beliefs more intently. And I think those are the ones that we really remember, and by attaching it to a character that we love.
You talked about Andy. Andy is a female, by the way, for the listeners. Have you thought of perhaps doing an audiobook of this or an ebook? Is it available in that?
It is available in ebook.
Okay.
You can buy either on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. I don't have an ebook, but you know, I've had some people ask me about doing an ebook, so that's something I'd like to do.
You mean an audiobook?
Yeah, I'm sorry, an audiobook. Yeah.
You are now currently the director of a social service agency in Indiana, so you're continuing to work in the area that you have written about and helping other people.
Well, yeah, you know, writing is, you know, there's a lot out there. This is kind of an interesting time for all writers. There's so much out there. There's so many ways to get good information out there. I have my day job still, definitely. I am a program director for a social service agency. And, it's one of the enriching things in your life.
And people don't realize that a lot of those social service agencies are very much needed, and it's unfortunate that unless you read it in a book or see it in a movie, it's almost a taboo subject to talk about at home.
Well, and I think, again, it goes back to that old fear thing. We're afraid of it. We are anything that we're afraid of, we don't want to talk about, and becomes a taboo. And that's, you know, that's the only way we can break it down, is if we get to the root of those things that we're afraid of, so that we can have an intelligent discussion about and really make changes and make headway. And I bet for mental health, I hope 100 years from now, and I hope it's not that long, we'll look back and we'll be like the Dark Ages, the way we treat mental health now.
Well, even as you mentioned, Lincoln's Melancholy, the book, there's another book about Mary Todd, about her, what they called madness, going mad.
Okay.
And I think it's called The Madness with Mary or something like that. But the fact that people don't realize or didn't know, Lincoln was quiet because his wife was this way, or she was this way because he was this way. Mm-hmm. And so we, as you mentioned earlier, that we grow up with certain things because we're afraid or we're learning. And I would imagine, I don't want to spoil the book here, but the fact that when people read this, they're going to connect with Ezra and with Andy.
Mm-hmm. Right, Right. And, you know, and that's what I think fiction has the unique power to look at these kind of issues that we are afraid to look at in other ways, to read an academic book or read, read about mental illness or depression. You know, I think it can frighten a lot of folks when we start to read it in a fiction setting, when we see real people dealing with these real issues. We start to see them maybe in a different way because we've humanized them.
And it's also when people start reading, and I'm not sure if you've addressed this or you've thought about this while writing, when people start reading, they start wondering, am I that way? As you mentioned a little bit at the beginning of the interview, that everyone has a little bit autobiographical in every song you hear or book. Sometimes you read the book or read a story and you go, I wonder if I'm that way.
I wonder if I'm
that kind of person, or should I change this way?
Well, you know, again, I think, you know, that's one of the main messages I hope for this book, that the one of the messages is there are no good guys and bad guys. There's just us, and we're both. Because I think, you know, we carry both good and bad within us. There aren't good people and bad people. We all have that potential to have that good and bad. We're all part of the same giant heartbeat, so, you know, we're going to have to just look at each other and accept each other and learn to get along. And, you know, we try hate and we try war and we try prejudice. We know those things don't work. So what if we started saying, well, let's look more at empathy. Let's look at saying, even if I don't endorse what that person is, you know, is or has done, I can understand them and I can be tolerant of them and I cannot judge them. And I think that's a huge message, and we have to accept ourselves because we have the good and bad within us.
Exactly. And I guess perhaps we should close with President Lincoln's quote, with malice towards none and charity towards all.
Great.
We want to thank you very much for being with us today. We've been visiting with Barbara Jakovsky, and she is the author of Searching for Lincoln's Ghost. But it's not specifically a children's book or a youth book. It's a book for everybody. That book is called Searching for Lincoln's Ghost, and it is available online, and you can go to Amazon.com or one of the other booksellers and find it. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
If you have a topic that you'd like Louis Science and his team of experts to pursue for Perspectives, you can reach us by coming to our website, ktep.org, click on the Contact Us button, leave your comments and suggestions, and make sure they go to Louis Science in care of Perspectives. A production of KTEP, all rights reserved by the University of Texas at El Paso and KTEP.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Science.